This is The Big Web Show, a live talk show about the web and the future of web publishing, hosted by Jeffrey Zeldman and Dan Benjamin. That's me. The Big Web Show is sponsored by MailChimp, powerful email marketing. MailChimp serves more than 300,000 users and 20 million emails daily, and their template language makes it dead simple to code HTML email templates that give your clients the ability to adjust colors, fonts, and more without breaking layout or having to mess with your code. Sign up free and see why everyone's switching to MailChimp. Check them out at MailChimp.com.
We have a very exciting show today. It's a show on content strategy, and joining us are two people synonymous with that category. Christina Halvorsen is the CEO of Brain Traffic, a content strategy consultancy, and the author of Content Strategy for the Web, a new writer's extravaganza from, I believe, the year 2010. So far, as I know, is it still the only book? It's not the only book on the subject anymore, but I believe it's the fun, excellent book on the subject.
Outstanding.
And it's certainly the, I would say Christina's book occupies a certain niche of, you know, the thing that made the category something people were aware of and talk about outside of like a small circle of five disenfranchised UX people. And Aaron Kassane, writer, editor, content strategist. He's a content strategist with HappyCog, the author of Incisive.new, the author of an upcoming book on content strategy, former editor of A List Apart, many other credits going back to the early days of the web when you were doing 12. Strategy. Well, you were doing, you were 12 and you were doing content
I'm
strategy.
I'm actually 65, so. No, I
you
I
have the
wear
same
sunscreen.
Hair color as my neighbor.
This is
Mrs. Schwartz, so. She's got like seven, not taluses. What are the things on the door?
Mezuzah.
Yeah, she's got seven mezuzahs.
Oh, great.
One for each day of the week. I don't know.
Well, we'll have a primer on Judaism after the show.
You are actually quite, although Erin is quite young, she has been doing content strategy for a very, very long time with one of the early web design shops, correct? In San Francisco?
I was with Sapient, actually, for a few years in Boston and San Francisco, and with some startups before that, back when startups were a new thing on the web.
Yeah. I hear they still are. But anyway, so those are the people. And I guess the way to start this, for the people under the rock who haven't heard of content strategy, or for the people who've heard about it but don't really know what it is, could one of you just address a little bit, what is it and why are we talking about it? What difference does it make? Like, I'm a designer or a developer, or I just buy stuff on the web, so I'm a shopper. So why do I care about content strategy? What does it mean to me?
Christina, let's start with you.
I'll take that question for 200. So content strategy, I mean, as you guys were saying, has been around pretty much since the web began. But for whatever reason, people haven't really started talking about it until the last 18 months or so. As everybody knows, content is something that's often left until the last minute in most web projects for a variety of reasons. I think one of the number one of which is that nobody owns the content. Everybody expects somebody else to be taking care of it. Our UX teams expect the client to be taking care of it. The client doesn't have the necessary infrastructure to support those efforts. So to the rescue comes content strategy. So content strategy is the practice of planning for the creation and delivery and governance of content online. I guess I should call it content strategy for the web. So that's kind of how we've been talking about it. There are tons of sub-disciplines and related disciplines that people are also kind of bringing to light. But that's sort of how we frame it up.
Governance sounds pretty interesting, and I have the feeling we'll spend some time during the show talking about that, right? But just so I understand what you're saying, and so our listeners do, you're talking about what you leave the client or what the company has to work with after the consultant goes away, correct? Kind of like an architect who comes back, an architect telling the building owner how to furnish the building and how to adjust, you know, how to add decks to it later and all that kind of thing. Kind of like that, or am I just...
I think so. I mean, the word strategy kind of gets kicked around a lot. And unfortunately, the connotations I think that a lot of clients in particular have with it is that this is this big idea that somebody is going to come in and give the strategic vision and throw all sorts of ideas out there about where people should be in like a year or 2 years or 5 years. And then they're like, okay, good luck with that. That'll be $1 million. And then they leave. And what I love about content strategy and the way that I talk about it is that it's actually a very concrete plan that is built on sort of the information that is gathered about content itself and its ecosystems through the audit and assessment phase. So I really feel like content strategy fills this important gap between kind of high level strategy about where we're going as a business and like the user experience strategy that we want to deliver online, our marketing strategy, and the tactics that we're going to use that are content related, what are our content initiatives going to be. And it's sort of that gap, I think, that no one has really been thinking about filling, or they haven't had the methodologies or the tools or the resources to really do that.
And I just wanted to, that's a fantastic answer, Christina, by the way.
Thank you, Erin. I'll send you your $20 later.
I just also wanted to mention that it's not just obviously an agency. It's not only part of the agency model. There are plenty of content strategy folks within organizations. I think that's actually a pretty fast-growing area. And also, there are a lot of people who are not full-time content strategists who are really interested in learning how to do content strategy as a part of their larger user experience role or editorial role or whatever it is. So it's relevant outside the agency world as well.
What kind of qualifications does a person need to do content strategy? Suppose you're on a very small in-house team. You don't have a lot of resources. You're a designer, but you also end up doing editing and HTML. What can you do this? Or are you the wrong person to do it? Who should be doing this? Ideally and realistically.
You want to take the first shot, Christina? Oh, okay.
Go ahead.
Sure. I actually think almost anyone who has user experience in their background can do content strategy. I think if you have editorial work somewhere back in there or writing, it might seem like a more obvious choice. But it's really the kind of thing that so many different people from different roles can do. A lot of information architecture people have moved over into content strategy. Mm-hmm. It has a lot of tie-ins even to the world of visual design. And so I think, well, there's the short answer that I get another $20 for, which is Christina's book. But there are a lot of resources now, and it's a very active, very helpful community. So it's not difficult to find a way in right now if it's something that your team needs and you can't bring in a specialist from outside.
Now I've got a quick question coming in from the chat room. I think it says Rhodes Jason, maybe Jason Rhodes. A lot of content strategy talk is about auditing content on existing sites. I'd love to hear what these two experts say about how it looks when the site is new from scratch.
That's a big one.
Yeah,
it's a big topic, I think.
It is, and I envy whoever is able to have a new site from scratch because it's very rare, I think, that organizations, unless they're a smaller organization with a very small amount of content, can sort of do the slash and burn and start over from the beginning. But I think that when you are sort of starting from the beginning, it is, you know, if you're unless you're a brand, well, even if you are a brand new organization, you've been creating content. You've got marketing materials, whether they are print or online. You've got email content that you've been sending out, assumedly. You've got maybe PR materials. You have sales materials. And so that's all content, and that's all content that can and should be considered when you are thinking about creating your web presence, whether it's on your site or through different delivery channels like social media, for example. So I think that the audit and assessment phase is still really critical, not just to take a look at the content that either has been created or that you're planning to create to ensure that your web content is consistent and maybe building on that messaging, but also assessing your real-world resources internally, what exactly it is that you're looking for that web content to do from an objective standpoint. I think that something that's really important with web content is that, and that content strategy really supports, is that we need to ensure that it's really useful to your key audiences, that it's usable once it's online. We also want to ensure that it's purposeful so that it is aligning with your business objectives and hopefully your user goals, and also that it's productive or profitable so that it's really doing something online. So if you do have the opportunity to sort of build that content from scratch, I think that those are very important questions that need to be asked. Why are we doing this? How is this serving our business? What are our competitors doing? What are our opportunities to differentiate there? If we're going to be delivering it via social media channels, why is this where our audiences are, or do they want us to be online? So it's a really tremendous opportunity to ensure that whatever you're planning isn't just something that's going to be really purposeful and productive for your organization, but also that if you commit to it, that you are also clear on what resources it's going to require to care for that content over time. And that's where the governance piece comes in.
Wow. So what did she leave out, Erin?
I don't think she left.
Have I been talking for half an hour?
Okay, that's our show, and we want to thank our guest tonight.
Well, just thinking back about projects that I've done with HappyCog, among others, that where we were really starting from scratch, a full content strategy process was actually really helpful to us, although some of the phases were a little more compressed. So, and I especially agree with those notions about assessing resources and doing workflow planning and setting up publishing systems and all of those things, because it doesn't matter if you already have giant stacks of content, you're still going to need to do those things. So,
do you guys ever get pushback from, say, editors? Or, I mean, two big types of content sites are museum library type sites and magazine publishing type sites. And those are both run by very experienced experts, and they happen to be experts in content. Do you feel, I've had trouble when designing something for a design client, like an architect, where even though they know that you're the expert in web design, they're a designer and they, not totally comfortable having someone give them advice about design. So do you ever encounter that where a museum curator listens politely, but sort of, that's nice, but believe me, I know. I mean, how do you, and if you have encountered that kind of stuff, how do you respectfully push back against the pushback? How do you persuade someone that you know what you're doing and are just there to help them, that you value their input, but you know what you're doing and you're there to help them?
Shall I jump on this one, Christina, to start with?
Yes.
Okay. Well, as it happens, I'm working on a big institutional project right now with a lot of content specialists, but I think this is a larger question that's relevant for things besides just cultural institutions and libraries and so on. It has mostly been my experience that when I've had a chance to work with a client who has a lot of internal content expertise, most of those experts have been really open to people from outside who have additional perspectives and who have an idea about general web content best practices, as opposed to their content expertise, which is very frequently that they know their customers very well and they know what kind of content they want to produce for them, but not necessarily how. And they don't necessarily have a notion about channels and, ways of making their workflow more efficient, and particularly ways of dealing with things like content management systems. And whenever you bring in a content management system, if you don't have someone doing content strategy alongside it, you can frequently wind up with a tool that really doesn't quite serve the institution's actual workflow. So either the workflow has to change or the system has to change. And these are things that, in general, we found people are really, really interested in getting help about. In situations, for me, where there's been some resistance, it's mostly been about demonstrating my respect for their understanding of their users. And we get to work with some very, very smart internal content experts. It's my favorite kind of job. I love it when they have content people already when I come on a project, because I learn things from them and I can bring in things that I've learned on other projects to their work. And it sounds kind of like a love fest, but it mostly has been for me. I don't know. Christina, have you had... Is that similar to your experience?
No.
Not at all. No.
Well, people... Everyone thinks they can write. I mean, when you're talking about JavaScript or something, a client... If you're talking about JavaScript, not that I recommend it. If you're talking about JavaScript, the client sort of steps back, or you're saying, we want to implement web fonts in this way. The client, to a certain extent, steps back and goes, okay, I'm dealing with some experts, and this is technical, and this is their area. But everyone, I mean, when I was a copywriter in advertising, it's one of the big problems. Everyone who's been to kindergarten thinks they can write, right? If you can write a sentence or write a business memo, you can write. So everyone's kind of up in there with the writer going, well, I don't know, I would put it this way, or changing it to be better, only maybe not better. And I can imagine similar situations, a sort of intrusiveness on the client's part. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm taking too hostile a look at it, and it's actually a very collaborative process, and the more the client writes, the better.
Well, here's a question. Actually, this one's inspired from the chat room, but it's something I've been wondering about. You know, Aaron, you mentioned a minute ago that it's great when companies have somebody who's already focusing on content, you know, and good at it. What happens when you read the content that these people are creating, or you're aware of the content they have created, and it's, to be honest, it's not very good? I mean, is there an approach or a strategy that you have to address that? Is there a good way to approach that? Because again, you can work and create an amazing design. You can have a great content system publishing it. You can spend a lot of time developing this, and then you actually have to hand it over at some point, and they're not good at it. How do you approach that?
I think it's important to make a distinction between content strategy as a whole and web writing and sort of the editorial part of content strategy. And the execution. I think mm-hmm. that is a much more contentious area than the sort of high-level planning and the assessment work. There are definitely potential conflicts there, and it's a tricky negotiation. I'm not sure that I've always been successful there, but actually I've been talking about this a lot, and I think Christina's had some interesting, maybe negative experiences, so I want to hold off and let her take that for a second.
Well, let's call them challenges. I think this actually really ties in with your question about larger institutions and museums. We've actually done some work with some research firms where, again, you're working with experts in these topics. And, you know, I think one of the first things that they're afraid of, and this may actually be the same thing with writing, this may tie into that, is that you're going to come in and tell them how to do their job. And they don't, that's not why they've hired you, right? And yet when you start throwing around words like best practices and governance, they sort of freak out. Like, well, you can't tell me what to write about. And I've been writing about this and writing in this way for years. And, you know, Aaron, when you talk about things like workflow and CMS and, you know, things that they obviously need around process, mm-hmm. I think that that is often a welcome change. Although I will say, one of the things that we run into is content in those organizations is so highly political with regard to, why do I put it in front of communications? You know, what do you mean it's going to take legal 3 weeks to review this? So they want, and that's where distributed publishing comes in, where they're like, oh my God, I can just press a button and it'll be live. And that's a whole other part of the conversation. Yeah, great. Yay, distributed publishing. So I think it's sort of similar where they're, and what I was actually going to say is where I receive pushback is more on substance and context, where they are saying, this mm-hmm. is what my readers need to know, and this is how they're going to look for it, or the context in which they expect to find it or want to consume it or read it and interact with it. And they're just saying that because that's what they think, or they think they know their users, but there hasn't actually been any user research done recently, and so their analytics are kind of a mess, and they're not paying attention to how people are searching for content. And so this is all just like, well, I know my users. And so pushing back on that and saying, well, how do you know your users, I think is very similar to sort of pushing back on the quality of writing, you know, and saying, well, I get that you think this is how people want to hear this content, or that, you know, this works well for, like, we had somebody recently say, well, we put all this work into our print fact sheets and Q&A. And if we are clear that this is what people want to know, why can't we just put it online? And that this is why I think it's really important then to begin to introduce clients and internal teams to the basic precepts of user experience design and why we have that, and that people are interacting with your content in a much different way. And that could potentially shed some light on the look how good my writing is. Okay, and I think that you should say it this way.
So how do you actually measure if your content strategy has been effective?
That is the $64,000 question. Aaron, take it away.
That's funny. I was just reading a series of about five or six posts by content strategists on that very thing this morning. The short answer is we're still working on it.
Right.
There are a lot of things that you can do to measure usability that you can adapt to measure the usability of content. This the same way that you would look at analytics as a user experience person, looking at very similar metrics will be helpful to you as a content strategy person. As far as really well-defined, specific content strategy engagements that go in to measure, I don't think as an industry we've seen anywhere near enough of those. I know someone who's working possibly on a book about that very particular thing, and I kind of needed to get going on it, because I think we really need it. But so that's sort of the vague answer. I can get into some specifics. I'm also interested in how Brain Traffic does it, though.
Well, how does Brain Traffic do it?
Tell you, Jeffrey. You know, we also
I needed to contribute. That was my contribution. I took the ball from
you. Do you want to tell us what you had for lunch?
It's you.
You know, this is an evolving conversation, and I think that there's a difference between usable content and effective content, or in other words, content that's actually being productive and profitable for an organization. And I think that the only way we can get at that, it's going to be unique for each organization, I think, because each organization has its own unique key performance indicators. So an e-commerce site, for example, if they are implementing a new content strategy that, you know, is more aligned with like content marketing or has to do with message hierarchy at the page level, they're going to be able to measure effectiveness specifically by conversions. You know, what are those calls to action? How are content changes affecting that? But I think that another key piece is that a huge part of content strategy is redefining workflow and governance, and those can be specifically tied to operational efficiencies and costs. And so I think that that's another really key place that we can be looking for measuring content strategy effectiveness and productivity.
How do we... go ahead.
One tiny thing that builds on that, sort of on the public-facing side, is that when, you know, Christina talks about being able to measure whether a piece of content is effective, one thing that has really helped me on some projects that I've done, including some with HappyCog, has been to spend a lot of extra time on the front end of a project working out really, really detailed specifications for what not only every site section's content or every page's content, but what every chunk of content is supposed to do, and document that in some cases right along with the wireframes or with content page templates that we provide, so that later when you go to measure, you know what you're measuring, because it's very difficult to measure unless you have a goal. And the goal may be really different even from page to page. So getting the expectations documented early is a big part.
Aaron, you wrote a really great post about this for Elistapart. Can you talk a little bit about Dan and Jeffrey, while I interview Aaron. Can you talk a little bit, though, about the document structure and what that documentation actually looks like? Because I think that what we find is that people know sitemaps, they know page templates, they know content inventories, but the idea of what we call a page table or something that details those sorts of specifications and objectives at the page level is something that a lot of people are unfamiliar with and that seems very, very overwhelming to them in project scope.
Sure. And I think that actually a bunch of us sort of came up with our own versions of these over the years. And it's been really interesting to see how similar they are and where the differences are. It's something that I started calling a content template a while back. I think it's quite similar to the page table you're talking about. Mm-hmm. But it's something that typically for us would come in after wireframes and mm-hmm. would be, in many senses, if I think about wireframes as dealing with content structure at the site section and sometimes the page level, these templates can get all the way down to the paragraph level, the sentence level, mm-hmm. Most commonly the content module level if you've got content that's yep. being pulled from a database onto a number of pages. But it's a sort of a hybrid between the kind of visual diagram you'd see on a wireframe and something that actually has content in place. So it's not quite lorem ipsum, but it's not final writing either. Instead, yep. it's something that has typically a description of what kind of content goes in each module or chunk and examples of what that looks like. And for us, it's often something that we try to put alongside the development of a CMS so that the CMS itself has some of this information built in so that when people... You know, distributed publishing is a real challenge, especially in big organizations. And the more that you can build guidelines into the actual tools, the easier it is for people who aren't writers or aren't editors to sort of remember what they're supposed to be doing. And we found that quite helpful. It is a new kind of deliverable for a lot of people, so we spend time talking about it. But honestly, we also spend a lot of time reintroducing content strategy all the way through the process.
Totally.
I often write at the beginning of all my deliverables, you know, this is what content strategy is and does. And totally. This is what we're doing. You don't really have to do that as much with this is visual design.
So here's a question coming in from, I think the person's name is Jim Renaud. Have you ever rolled out different content to a percentage of users to test which does better? I've done this with advertisements, but never a site. In a way, they're almost talking about, have you ever done A-B testing with different kinds of content, different kind of content strategy?
Mm-hmm. Go for it.
I can say, you know, that really kind of gets down to what I'm going to call the micro level of content, where in my mind that comes back a little bit more to the page level or content effectiveness with regard to messaging hierarchy and content usability. I'll say that typically the projects that we're engaged in are a lot more dealing with like the root problems within an organization of our content is out of control. We have no idea what all we have and where it's living. We don't have adequate resources and we have bad workflow. And so we tend to be working way farther upstream where in A-B testing, I would say, is really more a part of the execution piece of content strategy and maybe the ongoing editorial oversight and measurement component. So that is not something that we've gotten to the point yet where we're actually providing that level of testing.
A-B testing is something that I think works really well for certain kinds of content also. If you're A-B testing headlines and short blurbs, that's quite different from looking at a site with 5,000 pages and figuring out where to really begin with A-B testing. Mm-hmm. So it's a useful tool, but as Christina said, it's really specific. It's on the micro level, and most kinds of big content projects, it's only really going to be relevant for a small piece.
What about spontaneity and joy and felicity too? There has to be room for that, right? I mean,
we hate those things.
I'm adamantly against all of those things.
No, I'm not saying that at all. Obviously, when a screenplay gets written, it has to read spontaneously, and the actors have to be able to bring spontaneity to it, as if Iron Man just thought of this quip for his girl assistant. But it's all fitted into a very carefully orchestrated structure that is partly about plot, partly about budget. There's all kinds of variables that have been worked out, right, in a typical Hollywood movie, and I think the same is true here. That in a good site, there's going to be this play and ebb and flow if you have good writers, even though under the surface, every piece of copy is doing a job and it's part of an overall structure, just like an IA structure.
Yeah.
You agree. And you agree. There we go. I know in Happy Cog, we take kind of a holistic approach with everything, although when we started, we didn't. In other words, originally there was a design phase, there was a code phase, then there was an IA phase, a design phase, and a code phase, and almost nobody talked to each other. But we found we became better as an agency and did better work when everybody was involved with everything all the way through. And not everyone has that luxury, but it sounds like as you're talking about content strategy, the same thing is true in the way you approach it, that the content strategist isn't someone who's brought in at the end of the job to clean up the copy, but is someone who's brought in at the beginning along with the initial user experience people and research and discussion phase. And that the content strategist might still be talking to the designer and might even be talking to the coders or the template people as they come up with a sudden problem. You know, well, even some very specific problem, like on our detail page, if we use as much copy as you suggested, we're going to run into this problem, blah, 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 blah. So not to get too specific, but it sounds like you advocate a holistic approach where the content person is contributing to the project planning and all phases of the site development. Is that true? And if so, can you talk about that?
You want to start?
Yeah, I'll just say that I think that one of the huge, huge breakthroughs with regard to introducing content strategy into a project process is that simply by having the person who's going to own the content at the table from the beginning can ease so many pain points along the way. I think that having that person then available as a resource throughout execution and implementation is also very helpful. But I think that introducing content and content strategy and processes as a key component of the project planning process and design early, sometimes even before the entire web team sits down with regard to just the audit and assessment phase, has just really almost like revolutionized the way that web project teams are approaching their design process in a good way.
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, I think, was it Jonathan Kahn who just posted something about throwing all the UX processes away and starting with content, which is the radical side of that. But it's got to come in at the beginning. And I think that realization has been the major turning point for our discipline. I think there's a related question also that I very briefly want to get into, which is that there are content strategy processes that we can talk about as standardized phases, the ones that Christina walked us through. And those really tend to work on almost every kind of project. And we adapt certain things about them. We adapt certain things about the deliverables. But in a lot of ways, I think our discipline is standardizing and professionalizing in some really useful ways. It lets us share information and get better at what we do as a group. I also think there's something that could easily get lost in that process. And I think this is because I've been a content person for a long time when there weren't content strategy roles to play. And so I wound up serving as sort of an informal content advocate within a user experience team. Mm-hmm. And I think it's really important to have, as you say, Christina, having the person who is going to execute actually at the table. So not just doing the sort of separate pieces of content work and, you know, evaluating the deliverables of other disciplines, but actually, you know, having that person in the room for brainstorming when you've got, you know, a small creative team doing something really innovative, you need a content person at that table. And mm-hmm. it's not something that is just, you know, the content deliverables come over a wall. So yeah, really, really tying those processes together and keeping content integrated as well as starting it early, I think is really important.
And I think that something that feeds directly into that as well is the role of the information architect. You know, I think that the content execution and implementation has been so separated from the work that the IA does that ultimately I think what happens is that IAs are encouraged to focus on categorization and nomenclature and metadata schemas and page structure, et cetera, but that that's what people want to start seeing really quickly because those are deliverables that we recognize. And what ends up happening then is that they have to sort of gloss over questions of substance, right? What does the content actually deeply look like when that we're working with? How much of it is actually going to be useful to us from a qualitative standpoint, mapping back to our, you know, project and content objectives? And so I think another problem is that the role of the IA and the IXD, those have sort of bled together over time. And you know, of course, there are going to be many people who have and embrace both of those roles. But I think that for the information architect to be focusing solely on structure without considering messaging and substance is ultimately doing and has done a tremendous disservice to websites and web initiatives over time. And so whether or not there is a specific person with the role of content strategist introduced into the project, I think that asking and expecting our IAs, who are sort of inherently at this point part of the UX design teams, to really take on and take responsibility for some of those early audit and assessment activities and deliverables that focus deeply on content and content processes, it'll force them to sort of It provides them. Yeah, right. How am I doing? How's the chat room doing, Dan? it'll provide them with more tools and more context to understand, okay, if I create these requirements within my IA recommendations, how is that going to have impact on business process and future commitments, resource commitments that I'm asking the organization and the client to make. So I think that beginning to make that very, very, very clear relationship between IA and content strategy more apparent and more commonplace within our project process is going to solve a whole lot of problems for us.
Let's,
and improve the quality of our content.
Amen.
Amen.
Couple questions here that have come in from the chat room. Somebody says, I certainly hope that web managers and department heads are listening in on this. It'd be too bad if it was just the choir. And, you know, some people here are saying that they've been trying to sell the idea of having a content strategist position for ages. How do you do that effectively? How do you convince, whether it's a client or your boss, that it's worth it to bring somebody who is a content strategist in, even if it's just on a project basis? It's much harder to sell than I'm sure saying, oh, we need a designer, we need a programmer, because in a lot of ways, to a lot of people, this is an intangible kind of thing.
That's the other $64,000 question.
What if you call it marketing? Don't be offended, but what if you were to subsume the activity that you're doing under marketing, because it has some things in common with marketing, it's right. What are the business's objectives? What is it trying to tell the marketplace about itself? Where are pain points the customers have, and how can you respond to those pain points, make the customer feel better? How can you actually change your product so that the customer has a better experience and then let the customer know you've done that? So all those kinds of things fall under marketing. And while that's kind of dull stuff, every project is every page of every website in a way is selling that website, right? Mm-hmm. Every page is marketing itself. Otherwise, you're bored and you go somewhere else, because people's attention spans now are pretty fragmented, especially when they're using the web. So maybe you slip it in under the marketing budget, or you position it as, again, this is what I might do if I was having trouble just selling. The other thing you do is like work at a great company and have great clients and all that. But it takes time for everybody to get there. So I think selling is really key. Anyway, that's how I would do it. How would our experts do it now that they've had time to like zone out?
I have two quick. These are quick, I promise.
Go.
First of which, I don't know if you've heard Rahel Ann Bailey speak, Aaron, but one thing that she said at Canucks that just has stuck with me, she pulled up a slide and she was like, these are the titles, the role titles under which I have delivered content strategy. And it was seriously, she had like 12 titles, like business analyst, information architect, user experience design, content management system consultant. And that was so interesting to me that she was just like, yeah, I'll come in under whatever title you want. But like, if you need content strategy, I'm going to give you content strategy. So I think that's one thing is, people might ask
get them in under the radar, in other words.
Yeah, exactly. Right. You know, I think the other thing, I actually coincidentally this morning hosted Joe Polizzi here at Brain Traffic, and he is sort of, he's the evangelist on the content marketing side, which is basically, hey, marketers, direct advertising isn't working anymore. You need to create valuable, differentiated content to create these long-term relationships with your customers. And what happens is that marketers are like, okay, I'm sold. I want to do this. How do I do it? And so, Jeffrey, I think to your point exactly, they're looking for answers on how to do it. So if content strategists can come to the table and, you know, and be like, oh, funny you should ask, then that is going to be, you know, if we can explain, we're going to help you figure out what to talk about. We're going to help you figure out where to talk about it, how it's going to get done, who's going to do it, how much it's going to cost, what happens after it's out there. I think that that's a pretty attractive sell.
Okay, let's try this again. I think we've got the phones working this time. Caller, are you there?
So my question is, if you put content strategy in front of the design process, do either of you have any experience where you've seen that have not only just a positive outcome, but really have a significant impact on design?
Well, I haven't done really any substantial projects where a lot of content work was done before anyone else came on. I think it's an interesting idea, and I wouldn't mind giving it a shot. But I would say that when I've worked on projects where content strategy comes in really, really early, that yeah, it definitely has an effect on the design process. I mean, part of that is that if content strategy comes in early, and this ties back to something else that Christina was saying, you can work with whoever's doing the information architecture to really flesh out the information architecture in a way that means when you get to visual design, you don't hit that wall all of a sudden where, oh, now there's content and the design doesn't work.
Right.
So we have to chop the content in half, or we have to change the design, or we're going to use 9-point type.
Doesn't fit the content. The design,
right, it doesn't
saying
serve
one
the
message.
Content.
And yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. So
I mean,
it
makes about the work you did on the Amanda project, and, you know, that's a great little project, and it wouldn't, the design by Jason Santa Maria is brilliant, but it wouldn't exist without all that content and UX work that was done hand in hand at the very beginning of the project.
Yeah, and that was a project where we did something from scratch. You know, there wasn't a thing before, and we worked with a new publishing company to create, you know, the whole thing, and content had to come first. So, they had their content, their editorial content, but all the content strategy preceded the design there. And the design serves the content, which, as a content person, I think is a really good thing for the user, rather than building your content around the design, which happens too frequently.
I think most good designers would agree with you. I think the design should serve the function. The design should serve the content. The design should serve the brand. I think most designers agree with that. Most good designers agree with that.
Well, and my
even
experience
mediocre
has
designers agree with that. It's their hearts in the right place.
I think my experience has been that designers are like delighted and relieved when they find out there's going to be a content strategist on the project, or at least that the writer's going to be involved early.
Yeah.
You know, I've seen them sort of like do jigs of joy when they find that out, and for all of those reasons, you know.
Greg, does that answer your question, Greg, or are you?
It does. I was very curious to hear about the experience. I have a follow up question. Have you ever done a project where the creative direction for the content is serving one set of or one direction? You know, it's going in one path, and somehow, some way, the creative direction is going in not so much complete opposite, but definitely not in parallel with the content. And if so, is there any type of exercise or is there anything that the content strategist does to try to step in and at least provide some similarities that helps tie the direction of the content into the direction of the design? I suppose this would happen if the content strategist was brought in after the design work was done.
Aaron, I can speak to this. I think that what we've seen happen is that people will go after what are our brand values and maybe what is our brand statement, and then dive right into design, right? Like, okay, now we know what our brand values are. Let's use those to inform the kind of visual messaging that we want to convey. However, what happens then is that there are all sorts of assumptions made with regard to how that brand may or may not translate into the actual messaging throughout the site, which is how we are conveying the information that we want the audience to act upon. And that's, I think, where the disconnect occurs. So I think that before visual design is ever undertaken, that we need to be really clear about our messaging that exists sort of throughout, that permeates the site content, because then that's going to clarify not just what does our brand feel like, but also what are we as an organization trying to communicate. And then the design can better, I think, support that.
So then in that case, okay, is there a specific exercise or a list of questions that a possibly creative director, an art director, could throw into their existing routine or process to try to help get that more robust look at what the brand values are with what they might mean in the written word as opposed to design, so that at least the designers minus a content strategist can at least take that additional step to try to provide that more of that full 360-degree look at what the values are?
That is a great question. Seriously. That is a great opportunity for some another chapter of someone's book, I think.
Well, let me restate this.
Is there anything on that? Yeah, is there anything on that out there? Sort of for the non-content strategist.
Yes, I mean, I think I talk about this a little bit in my most recent An Event Apart presentation, where we talk about messaging hierarchy and how that sort of works a little bit in parallel with the design process. But Aaron, you were going to restate the question.
Oh, I just, to make sure I understand, you're talking about teams where there isn't a content person. Maybe later on there will be, but what can maybe the creative director or someone else in a different role on the team do to try to prevent some of those later content train wrecks, what kind of exercises they could do on the front end? Is that what you're asking?
I thought what you said was right, except it wasn't a content train wreck. It was more like to keep
messaging,
content and design messaging in sync.
Right.
What I would recommend, I think, is with design, we jump so quickly into how should this feel and what should this look like and what do we want this to be and what do we want it to evoke, that getting back to what are the messages, what is the information, what is the purpose of our web presence and our content initiatives that this design needs to support and in fact facilitate. I think that, and even pushing towards getting to that sort of primary messaging, what is it that we're going to say with our content? What is it that our users want to take away with our content? All of those, I mean, even just introducing those questions about content and messaging into the process is going to get people's brains thinking differently. So, and you know, that's often what we say too when people say, oh, I can never sell in the idea of a content strategist. Well, just start asking those questions about content really early in the process, because it'll get people starting to consider entirely different components of what they're trying to accomplish and what's required to accomplish that than they might otherwise. Erin, I don't know if you want to add on to that at all.
I'm very much in agreement. I did a presentation on something very similar a few years ago at An Event Apart, which is essentially sort of what you can do as a designer or even as a front-end programmer when there isn't a content person on the team. But I think, I mean, I agree with everything Christina said, and I think the fundamental question that you need to be asking about every piece of the site, whether you're talking about the content or the functionality, is what does it do? And if you know all those things, and that's, I think it's another way of getting back to messaging. It's very similar. I mean, messaging is sort of more on the brand side, but you need to know what everything is doing. And if you know that and you have a good grasp of sort of how the brand plays out as messaging, I think you're not going to be at great risk of that kind of later content design clash.
And the other thing I want to point out, because we get a lot of confusion on this, I don't know if you do, is that messaging is not necessarily the main tagline that occurs across your homepage. Right. Well, really, I mean, people, you know, that's sort of when we talk about messaging and marketing and advertising, I think that's what we think. But it really is sort of the high-level comprehensive statement about what it is, what the substance of the website is, and how it relates to what it is that we're trying to do as an organization. So I think not only do you need to understand what you're trying to do and what each piece of the content does and how the design needs to facilitate that and enhance it. But also, how is that mapping back specifically to your project and business objectives and also to your user goals? Because if it's there just because you can and because it's something cool that you can do, then it's probably just going to get in your user's way.
Yep. What about with the web apps? Let's get step back from, we've been talking about content websites, marketing websites, product sites. What about when you're developing something for the iPad or Android or the iPhone? Is content strategy still a part of that, or is this a place where it can be just developer driven and you can skimp on the content strategy? He said.
Oh, you know what I'm going to say there.
I don't.
No, of course, content strategy matters, but I think it's less obvious to teams who are working on those kinds of applications. But I mean, let's consider first of all that a lot of those applications are about serving content, and frequently I wind up seeing things that have great feature sets, but where obviously the content planning hasn't been done. Content updates aren't happening the way they should be. Content quality is compromised. But even when you're not creating something that's about delivering content as its main goal, there are still going to be pieces. Content isn't just text. You know, there are all sorts of content that aren't about the written word. There's video content, audio content, multimedia stuff of all kinds. And having a content strategy person around during the development of most kinds of those applications can honestly prevent the same problems that we used to see and still sometimes see on websites without content. You don't have the planning. You don't know where you're going to go after the release. And of course, also, I think you need to have someone in there to handle things like the subset of content that deals with interface, the language of the interface, the vocabulary, the terminology, all of those things. Right now, I'm working on a couple of applications for a web 2.0/iPhone/iPad startup. And they really need a content person. And luckily for their users, they recognize that. And, you know, I'm working as a writer and an editor, and I'm also helping plan workflow and all of those things for later. So, Christina?
Yeah, I agree with everything you're saying. I think that what's important to know, though, is that I don't think that a full-scale content strategy process applies to every single project. I think that it's important. Yeah, it's important to have the tools and the processes in place and understand what the different deliverables and purposes of those activities are. But I also think that content strategy is definitely something that you can kind of look at and pick and choose the different pieces that apply to your project and to the ongoing quality of your project, which I think is a lot. I think that's a lot of what you're talking about, which is I think we focus so much on launch and release, version release with our applications, that we don't really take into consideration, okay, what are our content requirements going to be? What is it that we're committing to with regard to output activities, workflow, changes in messaging or quality, et cetera, that will be required for each of those releases. So I think that considering content within your application, even if it is just text that is acting largely as like interface copy, just to have those requirements documented to some degree, I think is very helpful. Now, I know plenty of application developers that just write that text as they go along. And, you know, the ones that are really able to do that successfully, I think that that's great. I think that, though, as is evidenced by even just forms and online, that oftentimes doesn't work because what's intuitive to the app designer is not intuitive to the user.
Well, unfortunately, that does it for us on Time this week. Thanks again to my co-host Jeffrey Zeldman and to our guests Aaron Kassane of Incisive.nu and Christina Halverson of BrainTraffic.com.
Also, thanks to our sponsor, MailChimp.com, for making this show possible. And thanks to you for listening. You can find out more about this and all of our other shows by visiting 5x5.tv. And if you enjoyed this episode, please consider rating the show on iTunes. It's the best way to help new listeners find out about the show. This is Dan Benjamin for The Big Web Show. See you next week.